Hi, and welcome to another Cyber Podcast episode. I'm your host, Christoph Limpeler, and in this episode, Joel Miller talks to us about what it's like running IT and security for multiple car dealership locations simultaneously over the past 19 years. It's an impressive undertaking that he's managed to do by himself for many of those years until he hired help. So we'll also talk about what he looks for when he's hiring. Now, Joel is a very good friend of mine, and we actually met a number of years ago. In fact, we met while I was still in school, so before I found my way and before I got my career started. So as a result, I regard him as a mentor, and I've learned and continue to learn a tremendous amount from him. Joel, I welcome you to this podcast with open arms, and I'm excited to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, absolutely, Christoph. It's great to be here. I appreciate you having me.
I honestly have no idea why I waited so long to invite you to the podcast. I'm not sure if I ever told you this, but you're one of the main reasons that I wanted to start my first podcast, right? We'd sit there at a coffee shop or in your office talking about technology. And every time I kept thinking, we've got to record these conversations. There are so many other people that could benefit from hearing from this. So I shouldn't be the only one that's learning from these conversations, basically. So I don't know why I waited this long, but you're here today. That's what matters. And I want to get started from the very top. You know, tell us how you first got started in IT.
I think growing up, it started at a young age. I got exposed to computers in probably middle school or something like that, where we had some kind of coding camps in the summer, and really took to loving what you could do with a computer even at that young age. Obviously, things have changed a lot, but over the years, just technology grows and becomes more part of what everybody's using, and I just became really attracted to what you could do with programming, what you could do with technology. I would write software because there was very little software at the time. When I was 11 years old, I wrote a program for my dad, for example, that helped him write scheduling software for his company that he worked for. And that was really cool. I felt like I really accomplished something pretty important at such a young age. And it just kind of took off from there and really got interested in hardware and found it to be really the future and something I was really good at. But it was starting with helping people with their technology problems back then, I think, more than now, per se. People just didn't really understand technology. I mean, as technology grows, I think there's more need for people to help people with their needs. But it's pretty cool what technology has accomplished. And really, I feel like there's not enough people who really just found the right, I guess, concepts for what technology was going to grow into. We all thought it was just going to be the internet. And so that was where we spent majority of our time. We developed web pages or fixed PCs or built PCs or something. But obviously, it's grown into quite a bit more.
So when you say back then, what are we talking about here? Maybe 100 years ago? I'm looking at your picture and you're looking pretty old. So trying to let the audience know roughly what time frame we're talking about here.
Yeah. I mean, this probably all started around 1990s in that time frame. My first computer, like I said, was an Apple 2GS. So few people probably have heard of that, but it was definitely a pretty limited computer, and it didn't really do much. Didn't even have a hard drive in it, and so you wrote your own software using something called BASIC, which is a foundation of the language that some of the new languages are built off of. Eventually, so really long time ago.
And fast forward to today, can you walk us through a little bit more of what your role currently consists of? I know in the introduction I mentioned that you essentially run IT and security for multiple car dealership locations, but what does that mean? What's a typical week or maybe month in your life look like?
Definitely evolved over the years. Early on in my career, I really just focused on more or less taking a company who really didn't have a whole lot of technology in place and definitely didn't even have a lot of computers per se in their organization. They mostly ran their technology off of what's more or less thin terminals, basically, which all, would connect back to a main server somewhere. So I've really taken everything from such a young company that didn't do much technology to putting computers in every dealership. We've 500 plus computers or so, and servers and services on the internet. So really, at this point in time, I'm managing Windows computers, Linux computers or servers, network related, you know, switches, routers, firewalls, patch management, things of that nature, endpoint protection, just, you know, monitoring so much data and feeding that all into a system that can help make sense of it. Because, you know, over the years, it's really, I guess, evolved, like I said, to where you had to do a lot of this stuff manually. And thankfully, nowadays, most of that can be automated. And so that's kind of my goal is, and what I spend a lot of time now is trying to take the data from machines that we manage and putting it into an automation that helps to, you know, reduce the noise per se and improve the output signal. So it's really just trying to manage every aspect of the company with as little resources as we have. I mean, obviously we're growing our department at this point, and it's really helping a lot, but taking a computer that, I mean, a company that has such little technology and not just putting that technology in place, but training the people to use it and training them to do it in a safe way has been a pretty big undertaking.
And this is taking me back a little bit, but also to illustrate what we're talking about here. I remember one time, I think we were hanging out at a coffee shop or something like that, just talking, and all of a sudden you get a phone call and one of the employees is talking about, hey, somebody's trying to get me to give him my credentials to fix a problem on my computer or whatever. Is this legitimate? And you had to handle that situation, right? So when we're talking about your role here, and you did a great job explaining it, are we talking about literally managing infrastructure, technology, or IT for the entire organization in terms of sales reps, executives, everybody in the company? But then also, if you have somebody walking into a dealership and they're trying to connect to the Wi-Fi, you also have to protect those endpoints, right? Is that what we're talking about here?
Yeah, I mean, you're basically looking at every aspect. So, I mean, like I said, you know, down to the lowest tier member in the company up to the highest, the owner or so forth, or the customer, the client, the data of the client, all that information that we take in as an organization, all that has to be handled and properly managed. So yeah, it's every aspect of the company that you can think of when it comes to a financial institution, because essentially that's what an automotive dealership is we're offering insurance, or we're offering means of getting applications for you know, a loan or whatever. We're facilitating a loan. So all of that's involved, which is a lot of really sensitive data. And that's kind of where, I guess, a lot of my focus is these days is making sure that not just the data is made secure, but the processes and all the people that are involved understand really just how sensitive that stuff is and how we have to protect it as an organization and from a regulation standpoint, you know, as things are evolving.
So how do you sleep at night? I'm sitting here thinking, literally one employee clicks on the wrong link and you're going to have a really bad day, week, month, year. How do you make sure that you're able to sleep at night and not worry about all these threats that could happen?
Well, I mean, it's definitely something that that I do spend a whole lot of my time, I guess, trying to create scenarios that try to battle test my ideas for what I think would be a good defense. You know, trying to make sure that that we're not leaving any gaps open, at least procedurally, and creating a good, you know, playbook and action plan for how to respond to threats. Because I honestly feel like it doesn't really matter what company you work for. I mean, everybody keeps up with the news these days, it seems. And you see some company at some point in time that you thought was well protected and somebody, you know, got in. Obviously, technology only goes so far. Employees or people, human beings, generally are your weakest link in an organization, because you don't control that person per se, but you can train them and you can educate them. So the thing that keeps me up at night is, am I doing a sufficient job with that in educating our employees and making sure that we're staying up to date with threats? And I think I am. And I think we do a pretty good job. But as time goes on, you have to keep creating iterations in that process and improving it.
Well, and you're dealing with people who come from such different backgrounds in terms of what they know of technology, how it works, right? You may have a salesperson that's more aware of these threats, and then you have somebody on this exact same team who doesn't know anything about technology. They can barely work their phone, right? So you have to deal with, I don't know how many employees you have, but let's say, you know, potentially a couple hundred different employees who come from completely different technical backgrounds, and you have to be able to train them to make sure that they understand how to properly handle that weird email, that weird phone call, or whatever it is that they're facing that day.
I don't know exactly the number of employees we have currently, but it's somewhere close to 500 or so, and it keeps growing. You know, this company has really done a really good job at keeping employees and growing them. But like you said, yeah, you do have a pretty big spectrum of people who understand technology or grew up with technology, because, you know, at this point in time, we do have people who are young that did grow up, you know, from the point where internet and everything was popular. And we have the other end where people are older and don't have as much experience or exposure and don't want the exposure. It's a balance of trying to train the employees that you have and not trying to overwork them through too much rigorous just process that might be lost on them. So it's not too hard to determine that balance after you spend time with the people and try to figure out what works with them, because, you know, we do some training. And then we kind of evaluate with each team, you know, how well they're retaining it. And we're not just delivering training. So it really helps to get feedback on what things help them to understand what they need to do to improve their security as an employee. Because that's ultimately what you're trying to do here is you're protecting an organization, but you're also protecting the customer and the client. So as long as everybody understands that that's the goal, they get more on board with the training. It's not just training to, you know, check a box.
Or to be annoying or to waste their time. Yeah, right. Absolutely. Yeah. I've definitely sat through, I'm sure we all have here, sat through some training where it's just like, come on, why am I doing this? This is such a waste of time. I already know what an email phish is. I know what to look for. I got this. But if you're able to rally everybody behind that cause, I think that makes a lot more sense. And they'll probably retain the information a lot more because they care about it a lot more. So it makes a lot of sense. But one thing that I find interesting, Joel, is that when, you know, I mentioned how do you not stay up at night? How do you go to sleep at night? How do you not worry about all these threats that could happen? And what are you doing to try and make sure that these threats don't materialize? Your response was not, oh, I deployed XYZ solution, whether it's a hardware or software solution, right? It was, I need to train the people at the company to understand what kind of threats we're facing, why it's important, and how to prevent them. So would you say that your biggest challenges that you've faced over the past 19 years in this job has been a people challenge and not so much a technology challenge?
I would say that it's more heavily weighted on the human element than it is on technology. I mean, technology has been, you know, lacking at some point in time. I think it's really improved significantly up to this point in time. But people will always be, like I said, just kind of the weakest link, and it's always going to be the area where you should spend a fair bit of time in, because you can deploy the world's best security, but it's only going to be so useful because the people that interact with your systems, that take phone calls or receive emails, those people have to be educated and trained to understand what to look for and how to better protect themselves in the company.
So you mentioned earlier that you've started to build out a department. I know you've hired somebody over the past couple of years or so. And I think you told me recently that you're going to be hiring more soon. So what are some things that as you're hiring for these positions that you're looking for in somebody to join your team?
One thing that I found that's pretty consistent across, I guess, my experience is if you if you've worked in IT at all, or if you haven't, generally you're faced with problems. And so you don't tend to see, or at least my experience is, I don't tend to see the same problem day in and day out. If you do, that's not good. But so being able to take a new problem and understand, I guess, how to tackle it, how to go about solving it is really important. So the problem solving skills, or taking a big skill, a big problem, and being able to break it down into smaller problems, it becomes more manageable. That's just sort of critical thinking is really important, because ultimately that's what you're spending a lot of your time with, is, you know, aside from, you have to be a pretty good detective in a sense. You have to be able to investigate a problem. You might have a person report an issue to you, and that problem was reported in a way that was factually inaccurate, but it was their perspective. So you have to be able to take someone's perspective who may be giving you misinformation, but not obviously intentionally, just because they didn't understand it, they didn't perceive it correctly. And you need to be able to investigate into that problem and be able to break it down, see what they see. And so you have to be able to critically think about a problem and just try to develop a skill of how to research. Like I said, the problems that I face, at least early on, and somewhat now occasionally, are problems in new areas. And you're exploring new areas, trying to do new things, and you're trying to improve processes or whatever. So all this research skill is very important, being able to find the answer and be able to tear something apart so that you can understand it better, to research the problem to find a better answer.
So as you're opening up these positions and you're trying to find somebody who's going to have the ability to troubleshoot and figure out whatever problem comes their way, as you said, daily problems come up and they're going to look very different. How do you, as a hiring manager, but I'm also asking as a candidate, so that they can work on this in order to improve their way of showing it, perhaps through the interview process or through the resume, but how do you look for that in somebody's resume? And then if you happen to see something that catches your eye on the resume, how do you look for that during the interviewing process?
I mean, if somebody, you know, I think it's kind of difficult in general just to evaluate someone's critical thinking by looking at a resume, because knowing where somebody worked and what they did doesn't necessarily reflect their skills, especially if they wherever they worked or whatever they did didn't test the skills that you're looking for. But I try to, in the interview process, I try to build, I guess, a scenario for them to somewhat realistic scenario, that is, that they can sink their teeth into a little bit, something to cause them to sit and derive some potential solutions for something that typically not one solution to fix it. It's not this is broken, now fix it. It's here's a thing that we need to do or we need to accomplish. What would be an efficient way of solving this problem? And so just being able to just see them take the problem apart in front of me, or write up a report that shows not just their ability to think and look at a problem, but, you know, how well are they at communication? Because IT in general or security lays heavily on communication. So you have to be able to work within a team. You have to be able to communicate to me or to other managers. And so that's really important, that the correct message, or, you know, we're all speaking the same message and we're being consistent. So these are all pretty important things.
And before this podcast episode, just for context, you had told me that one of the members of your team is currently working through their A+ certification. So they're preparing for it, they're about halfway through, and then they'll go and take the certification exam. So in your opinion, what is the value of a certification like that? And is that something that you think can demonstrate ability to troubleshoot, and therefore something that you look for in somebody's resume when they're applying for these sorts of positions?
So yeah, they are halfway done with A+. And the reason why I choose certain certifications such as the A+ is mostly because I feel like it has a lot of really good content in it that, it's always been sort of a difficult thing to do, is to define specific training that teaches everything. I don't believe there is such a thing that exists. So you have to find certain certifications or courses that supplement and build that learning path for the individual. And coming from where this person started, I felt the A plus would be a good beginning. Considering how much it's evolved over the years, it's definitely, you know, it's a much broader scope than when I took it years ago back in 1998. So it definitely has a lot of material that if you spend time with it, it gives a person a lot of information about computers and technology and how things work. And so, you know, I work with the individual who's doing the testing or the training and just try to develop a better experience for that person, you know, answering questions and trying to pose questions about how stuff works, you know, technology. You know, there's so much technology that, I mean, that book it's massive now. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's just so huge. But certifications are pretty valuable, I think. Not specifically just to get the certification, but in the process of taking it, if you actually do take the time, a lot of these certifications were put together pretty thoughtfully. You know, CompTIA in this case really thoughtfully put this together, I think, to deliver, you know, skills and trains knowledge, you know, the individual in the areas that would be pretty important for them to learn.
I think people are getting tired of me saying this, but I love the saying of it's not about the paper certification, it's about the journey to getting certified. And I think you mentioned that where you said if you really put the thought behind training for it, not just memorizing concepts, not just studying flashcards, but actually understanding the concepts and then going and taking the certification, it's great that you passed it, but really what's far more valuable, in my opinion, is the experience you gained by studying for it to then go and pass it. So I agree with you there completely.
Yeah, there's never anything worse than seeing somebody with a certification, but you know, if you ask them things that are related to that certification, they draw a blank. So definitely if you do pursue certifications, it's going to be expected for you to be able to retain some of that information. You know, obviously not everything, you know, the internet is a thing now and Google helps you recall things, but you definitely need to be able to learn the material during the process.
As we wrap up the podcast episode, I'd like to ask you a couple of what I call quick fire rounds, which are just really quick questions. Give me a short answer back. And then right after that, we'll move into Q&A for the live audience. But what are some of your favorite hobbies? What are things you do outside of work?
I guess some of the things I do outside of work, I mean, I do a lot of research. I don't really consider it work, but it's really enjoyable for me to do a lot of research in the security area that involves technology that's either new or it's somebody has found something interesting, unique about it. And so I tend to spend a lot of time just researching things and writing stuff on blog and stuff lately. But but if it's not technology, if it's not computers, I play around with stuff on my car. it's always fun to tinker with my auto.
Yeah, I still need to see it. It's been a couple of years since I've seen your car, but I bet it's evolved quite a bit since then, especially in terms of power. So I'd love to see that soon. And speaking of cars, of course, because you work at a car dealership or multiple car dealerships, if you could have any car in the world at no cost to you, which one would you pick?
My dream car has always probably been a Porsche 911, but specifically, you know, they came out with a GT2 RS, which I don't really know how dailyable it would be. It seems to be pretty decent, but it's so fast in terms of handling. You know, that's what really I find pretty attractive in a car is not just the styling and not just how fast it goes, but how well it goes around a corner, because that's so much fun to go around a track or something like that. I could see that being a really cool hobby.
That'd be a fun car to take on the track for sure. Last question in the quick fire round. What is one thing that you wish the world knew or did differently when it comes to cybersecurity?
I mean, in terms of cybersecurity in general, I think we're getting there, but automation really is something that needs to be baked in for literally everything that it applies to. Because, I mean, regardless of how big a team is, ultimately, every company that's over a certain size is looking to automate as much as they can. I do some automation, and it's definitely shown its value, but there's been limitations to how much I can automate, how much I can integrate into a workflow that, as things change and improve, you know, I'll be able to do more and more, but I'm more or less limited by the technology, you know, in some cases to do what I want to do. And I'm having to sort of hack up my way of trying to make it do things that it probably wasn't ever intended to do. And that's kind of how things start, I suppose. But automation is really, I think, the number one thing. And as much as we can automate security to become basically, I wouldn't say replace people, because it's never going to replace people. People are going to still be needed to develop the automation process or to understand it or fix it or whatever. But machine learning has really helped a lot. And being able to use that technology in cybersecurity has really advanced it. And now we need automation to help take it to the next level.
Automate all the things. Joel, thank you so much. I appreciate you coming on the show today. If people want to follow up, how can they connect and reach out?
So the easiest way to reach out to me is probably on social media. I'm always on Twitter doing some research or talking to people. So at Joel F. Miller is my Twitter handle. And I've got a website, securitybyjoel.com. So one of those two places can always be found.
Thanks, everyone, for tuning into this episode. And please do reach out to Joel via social media or on his website just to say thank you for sharing his time and his knowledge with us. Joel, like I said, thank you so much for being here today. Now, immediately after this episode ends, members of Cyber's Discord community will be able to ask Joel any question that they want. So if you'd like to have access to our future guests for live questions, you can join by going to cyber.com/Discord, and then we'll keep you posted on when our next episode will be. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and I'll see you next time.